Hi everybody, this is Nathan Butler, host of Chrono Radio. Now, usually for one of these serial editions, you don't hear a preface from me. I just sort of let the story go on for itself. We had those first three serial editions, Parallels Parts 1, 2, and 3, that were told in a Boomtown sort of feel, where each episode was a different character's perspective on the same events, and the truth was revealed more as we learned each character's perspective. By the time you got to Part 3, you knew what was really going on. The fourth serial edition was Matted, which is a story that came out through a Chrono Radio serial edition contest, which Michael Galasso won. Now we come to the next series of Chrono Radio serial editions, and it's a little different. Back around the turn of, I guess you'd say, the millennium, the last years of the 90s and the earliest years of 2000, 2001, and so forth, I was working with a group of people called Clear Concrete Productions on a film called Prelude to Hope, Star Wars Episode 3.5 Prelude to Hope, a fan film, something that got a lot of attention over at the Force.net Theater. On that, I was working with Devin Reed, Ryan Jordan, Chris Newsom, Chandler Morris. Basically, my job was to write, or actually rewrite, different parts of the storyline. Flesh it out, make it sound better, make it work better, and whenever they went through and decided to alter the way the story was edited together, make the writing still make sense through providing information on new voiceovers or new bits of voice work that could be done when we saw characters without seeing their mouths move, and so forth. And while we were really fired up about this, we started working on another project that was originally dubbed Saving Private Solo, a gritty war drama that eventually became a script for Star Wars Second Strike. Then we had a bunch of different things plague the production of Prelude to Hope. It wound up getting knocked very off track, and Second Strike was not going to be able to be done as a film. So at the urging of Chris Newsom, also a member of the team, I decided to reshape Second Strike into what became the first ever Star Wars fan audio drama released on the internet. The second one, actually, I believe, in production, Rise of Nobility, started work first, at least as an audio drama. It was revised. We essentially broke it away from Clear Concrete Productions and put it under my new banner, Razor's Edge Audio. And that story, which has a credit for original concept going back to Devin Reed, blossomed into this great three-part audio drama about Project Flash Death, a bioweapons research project, and the people sent to stop it. Now, eventually, the Prelude to Hope film project was restarted from scratch as Prelude to Hope 2.0. And going into that, we had several different drafts of a script written by several different people, one of which being myself, based on a new outline, a new revised and expanded outline of the Prelude to Hope story by Devin Reed. It was still the story of trying to capture the Death Star plans. It was still the story of two Jedi, one dark, one light, and the light side Jedi's rebel counterparts. Only there were some added characters and it was a bit more fleshed out. I further fleshed that out into the Prelude to Hope 2.0 script. However, eventually, Devin and the others with Clear Concrete Production decided to go a totally different direction with the story. When that happened, we had a story just sitting there ready to be used, but no one getting ready to use it. So eventually, rather than seeing that work go to waste, I stepped in and, just like we did with Second Strike, retooled this script into an audio drama. The Prelude to Hope 2.0 script that I had written based on Devin's outline was revised with changed names, a few changed circumstances, changed planet names to fit the Farisol system as detailed for Second Strike, and the mission became one not dealing with the Death Star plans, but dealing with sketchy early information about Project Flashdeath. Essentially, it made that story into a prologue or a prequel to the events in Second Strike, as the first time the Rebel Alliance ever got a glimpse at anything about Project Flashdeath. And that story was renamed Star Wars Nothing Changes. We starred Matthew Gordon as Darius Koba, the Saris Samita character that would have been played in Prelude to Hope by Chris Newsom, the Dark Jedi Guardsman that you see in all the preview materials for Prelude to Hope, and with Brian Bassetti playing Traven Koba, who would have been Devin Reed's Lux Samita character, the blonde-haired, blue lightsaber Jedi Knight seen in the Prelude to Hope preview materials. That story was then mixed by Steve Fluharty, and we released it in six serialized segments throughout 2004. Finally, weaving this tale people had wanted to see as Prelude to Hope, but doing it in such a way that we could lead up into Second Strike and sort of embellish the universe that had already been created to include Second Strike, the episodes of my ongoing series Star Wars Anthology, Parallels, Matted, and so forth. But there was a catch. At the time when I was working on Prelude to Hope, we were so psyched about it, and there was so much hype surrounding it, that we wanted to produce a bunch of side materials, supplemental materials, you might call it. One of those was a prequel comic book called From the Ashes that told the story of how the two brothers lost their father when their home was attacked by Darth Vader. Well, when it came time to create the Nothing Changes audio drama, the story of that From the Ashes, that was a comic book that was being done by me with art by Craig Moore, the story was condensed a little and inserted as a flashback at the opening of Nothing Changes. That story got told. But there was another story, a story called Star Wars Forgotten Knights, that took place much, much later during the New Jedi Order era. It was a sequel to Prelude to Hope, the story that became Nothing Changes. And it would bring back one of our two characters, presumed gone, in a very odd, unique, different fashion, and put him alongside a Jedi Knight to go up against the Yuuzhan Vong. Now, originally in this story, which was a prose story, not a comic book, not a film script, the Jedi Knight that our survivor was teamed with was Kyle Katarn. A long time later, while I was still working on Nothing Changes and putting that out there as an audio drama, I wound up getting a chance to write for Dark Horse Comics for Star Wars Tales and did a story dealing with Kyle Katarn. So we fleshed out what he would look like, how he would act in the New Jedi Order era. And it didn't match the character in Forgotten Knights, this prose sequel. But finally, as Nothing Changes' serialized releases were finally winding down, I started to think about resurrecting that story. Star Wars Forgotten Knights, featuring Saris Samita and Kyle Katarn, was subtly altered and relaunched as a sequel to Nothing Changes entitled Everything Changes, featuring Darius Kova in a new form, and rather than Kyle Katarn, a new Jedi named Corso Vale. It brings closure to the story of Darius Kova, who we thought was left for dead at the end of Nothing Changes. We know he was shot by many blaster bolts. We know we didn't hear him in the final moments, but that doesn't necessarily mean he was gone. So here we are, something that could be considered many things, an expansion of Nothing Changes, an expansion of what Rich Siegfried and the Garners often call the Butlerniverse of my various stories, but also a piece of long-lost Prelude to Hope history, again resurrected, just as Prelude to Hope 2.0 was resurrected as Nothing Changes. The stories of Darius Kova and Traven Kova come to an end throughout the course of Nothing Changes and Everything Changes. And in a sense, for people who had been looking forward to Prelude to Hope, the symbolic, the allegorical, the parallel story, you might say, if you can change the names in your head, of Lux Samita and Saris Samita, that were to have been told throughout From the Ashes, Prelude to Hope, and Forgotten Knights, is being told here too. You just have to use your imagination. And so, without further ado, we begin this 2005 Chrono Radio Serial Edition series, Everything Changes. Thank you for your attention, thank you for your patience, thank you for your interest, and please, enjoy the new serial edition. Oh yeah, a brief note. This story takes place immediately after Balance Point, 26 years after the Battle of Yavin. And it would do you very well to go back and listen to the audio drama Star Wars Nothing Changes before trying to listen to this serial edition. There are some things that may not make sense if you haven't. And so we begin. Star Wars, Everything Changes, Part 1 of 4. A sequel to the Nothing Changes audio drama from Razor's Edge Audio, by Nathan Butler. Prologue, The Cliffs. He was there again, the cliff. Below, the waves were the same as they had been that day. The dust of the ground and the spray of the ocean mingled in the air as they had when he'd nearly failed. On the wind, he could almost hear the voices echoing from the past.
I sense darkness in you.
Sorry to disappoint you.
On the contrary, I'm impressed.
Hate to see you executed. Failure can do that.
I do not fail.
Yes, he'd nearly failed. He dropped his brother from the cliff, then cut him down when he tried to climb back to continue their confrontation. He'd sent his brother, grievously wounded, down into the raging currents from which he would never return. His moment of anger, his assault, his victory, his fault. But now was not the same. This was not a race to secure stolen information about Palpatine's Flash Death Project. That pathogen, that metaviral weapon, had been stricken from existence 2 decades ago. No, his rational mind told him, the struggle for the Flash Death data was over. So why here? Why now? And as if in a dream, and how could he be sure this was not just another nightmare or the byproduct of too long in meditation? The answer appeared before him. An answer in Rebel Alliance gear, scowling beneath a soaking mess of blonde hair, and brandishing a lightsaber of blue that matched the sky. Surprised, but not surprised, he moved toward the impossible figure, the dead man alive and well. He opened his mouth to speak, but found his words would not come forth. His voice was trapped behind a crimson helmet, the one he thought he had abandoned to the flow of time. He reached up, thinking to remove the helmet and free himself from the unnatural gag that held his tongue. But he never had the chance. With a blur of motion, the dead man was upon him, his lightsaber slashing with the precision of a medical droid's laser. Thrust! A cloak clasp gone. Swish! A cloak severed, floating away on a rising wind. Slash! A helmet severed cleanly down the center, falling from his face like the halves of a ripened fruit. Thrust, swish, slash, and on, the hum of the blade weaving a bizarre symphony over the landscape as rising winds gave way to a storm raging above the cliffs, and the landscape slowly began to fade into something intangible, there but not there, real but unreal. And then he was on his knees, with the dead man's lightsaber humming in time with the sound of distant thunder slicing through the air toward his neck. Chapter 1. The Noble. The warrior could smell the men holding him. Two big, unscarred, blue-skinned infidels, unworthy of the glory of the deaths he would gladly give them if allowed a moment of freedom. Freedom, however, did not seem likely. At the moment, his arms were bound tightly behind his back in what the infidels called stunk cuffs. The very thought of the impure, blasphemous technology of this galaxy against his own skin filled him with a revulsion threatening to make him vomit. That would be an entertaining sight, the warrior thought. Two infidels covered in the vomit of a true child of the gods. Perhaps they would be allergic and find themselves writhing in agony as a result of something as simple as the treat does he'd eaten before his capture the night before. The thought brought a smirk to the Yuuzhan Vong's face, until he slowed his pace and found himself shocked by the stone cuffs, that is. The warrior, Shakan of Domain Lan, continued forward as another pair of blueskins pulled open an ornate double door ahead of them, allowing them to move from the tapestry-lined hallway into the chamber where, he presumed, his death awaited him. And on any other day, he might have been right. The guards holding him stopped, halting him with them. Shakan blinked as light from the room's transparent ceiling momentarily obscured his sight. An open ceiling, from which the infidels could see the sky, but actually closed with a transparent inorganic substance holding the natural world at bay as the infidels were wont to do. Even the walls of this ancient structure seemed a mockery of nature, built of woods and natural stones, but all without a spark of life, all infused with technology bred of machines. He would enjoy watching this galaxy burn. As his eyes adjusted to the new light, the warrior raised his eyes toward the figure sitting on a decorative chair, perhaps a throne, in front of him. It was another blueskin. The planet was infested with them. This one was no more remarkable than the others. He wore body coverings of dark gray that suggested the musculature beneath. A black cape hung from his shoulders. He wore his hair longer than those holding him, tied into one thick tail, and bore hair along the top of his mouth and just below the center of his lips. His eyes were like all the rest. Red. Glaring, pupilless red. An infidel female might have found the blueskin attractive, but to Shakan, he was just another blueskin. He simply had a fancier chair than most. He let out a snarl at the blueskin in the chair. He expected a flinch. He expected surprise. Instead, he received the smirk of a mocking infidel. Shakan snarled again.
Kira Tog Sharaka! Utaf!
The blueskin remained calm.
You're not going to be leaving us any time soon, friend. Calm yourself.
Even as his Tizzaworm translated the words for him, his anger grew. Friend! The blueskin was continuing to mock him. He spat in the throne's direction. He shouted, struggling against the hold of the other blueskins and the stunk cuffs.
You're wasting your strength.
Struggling to no avail, the warrior stared the blueskin in his monochrome eyes.
Tal Shakamel!
To his astonishment, the blueskin held his gaze without blinking and rose from the chair. But his astonishment at the infidel's stoicism was matched milliseconds later as the blueskin spoke.
Nira Tankila Shatila Nok Droshana.
The blueskin spoke in the Yuuzhan Vong tongue. No, you won't. And neither will those captured with you. Despite himself, Shakan could only stare.
Surprised?
The blueskin asked.
You shouldn't be. Your kind should learn not to teach your slaves your language. You may be a dark spot in the Force, but their minds are open once freed of your parasites. No, you will not die with honor. You will be a message to your kind.
His shot gone, rage once again coursed through Shakan Lan. He spat a torrent of Vong words at the stranger.
Your blood will be the message to the gods of my victory.
Again, the blueskin smirked. The stranger then turned to the blueskins holding his shoulders.
Leave us.
As the subordinates exited the room, sealing the doors behind them, the caped blueskin waved a hand through the air in front of him, and Shakan felt the stunk cuffs on his arms fall away, followed by the chains that laced between his legs. Perhaps this infidel did have a sense of honorable combat after all. The fury upon him, Shakan thrust his arm to his side, allowing his unconfiscated amphistaff to uncurl from his arm. Why the infidels had allowed him to keep it was a moot point for the moment. Snarling, he straightened the amphistaff into its staff form and leaped toward the blueskin. The staff cut through the air toward the unbeliever, and then through where the man had been. Calmly rotating around from his dodge, the blueskin retaliated with a swift kick, faster and more powerful than any infidel Shakan had yet encountered. Shakan lurched backward from the body blow as the blueskin seemed to blur in motion, lunging behind Shakan. Could the light be playing tricks on his senses again? Or could this blueskin be... The thought was lost as the infidel warrior's grip tightened on his neck, swinging Shakan around to send his head slamming down with immense force upon the arm of the blueskin's throne. Shakan could feel the bone in his jaw shatter like the shell of a Beeroth egg. Embracing the pain, Shakan twirled away from the blueskin, bringing his amphistaff to bear. He swung the staff in perfect form, fully intending to slash into the infidel's skull down to the minuscule, unenlightened brain inside. Instead, the blueskin caught the amphistaff with his bare hands. The staff tore gashes across the blueskin's flesh, but he seemed not to notice. Perhaps this infidel had learned to embrace pain. His death would bring honor to Shakan and Domain Lan. That is, if the infidel hadn't, in one swift move, spun the amphistaff down out of Shakan's hands parallel to the floor, and driven the staff venom head first through Shakan's side. Not a fatal blow, but a blow from which he could not recover in time to save his life if the blueskin was intent on taking it. As he fell to his knees, he turned his gaze upward to his adversary. The blueskin again spoke in the warrior's tongue. Return to your masters. Tell them, all of them, this place is not for you. And then the thought so rudely interrupted earlier returned to Shakan Lan. Yes, this blueskin must be a Jedi. As he drew upon the force to push open the doors to exit his personal audience chamber, the blueskin noble hefted the broken Vong pilot by the bonds of his armor, carrying him from the room like so much garbage. Blood dripped from his hands where the Vong staff weapon had cut him, but the pain was hardly noticeable. What was noticeable, and heard throughout much of the surrounding hallways, was the unceremonious crash as he tossed the barely conscious enemy to the ground in front of his two personal guards.
See him to his quarrel, Skipper. He will be leaving.
Without hesitation, the two guards, flanked by four other guards who stood watch in the hall, ushered the Vong out into the springtime air of Lishador. Returning to his chamber, the noble stepped to his antique throne, a gift from his wife's family. Willing the force to slow the blood flow in his wounded hands, he reached down to a small panel cut into the chair's right arm and keyed the comm.
Ready my shuttle.
He knew the warrior's heart, as he shared it in himself. The Vong would see his defeat as binding him by honor to deliver his message back to his superiors. His little Vong Vornsker was about to lead him to the larger prey, and once that prey had been eliminated, his people could be safe once again. Yes, Lord Darius Kova, Jedi Knight and nobleman of Kiss Society, was quite pleased. Chapter 2. Corso.
Hold still, you sithin' bastard.
Again, the coral skipper in his sights juked out of his line of fire mere milliseconds before his blaster fire could score a volley of rapid shots. Without enough quick shots, he couldn't disorient the skip's dope and basal. And without disorienting the dope and basal, he couldn't take the skip out. And oh, how he wanted to take this sithin' bastard out. It wasn't the kind of calm, passive mindset one would expect from a Jedi Knight. But then Corso Vale had never been the poster child for Jedi stoicism. As he swooped the Forerunner deeper and deeper into the unknown regions in pursuit of the Coral Skipper, he was becoming acutely aware of just how frustrating it was for the New Republic Starfighter Corps to go head-to-head with Vong vessels. The Yezzan Vong had appeared on the galactic scene just over a year earlier, when their invasion began with the slaughter of an Exegal team on Belkadan. Since that time, the invaders had cut a path of destruction and occupation through the galaxy, taking world after world, transforming some for their own purposes, leaving some ravage, and causing the destruction of others. Already the Vong had cost the lives of New Republic heroes, Chewbacca of Kashyyyk, Senator Elagos Akla of Kamas, Jedi Knight Miko Reglia, Kip Duron's pilots, members of Rogue Squadron, and countless others, both civilian and military. Now, though, things had begun to change. With the end of the last major engagement with the Yuuzhan Vong at Duro, the Vong had placed an offer, more an ultimatum, before the galaxy. Surrender the Jedi to the Yuuzhan Vong, and the Vong would halt their invasion. No one in their right mind would trust the Vong to keep their word, but on many worlds, Jedi were being rounded up like animals, prepared for sacrifice to a race of warriors bound to gods of which this galaxy had never heard. It was the birth of a new era of Jedi purges, and the Jedi were determined to ensure that this series would not end the same as Palpatine's round. Not that the Jedi were actually doing their part to save themselves, Corso mused. Even as the galaxy at large turned against them, Master Skywalker continued to hold on to ideals that could only lead them further into a defensive position, ready to be slowly wiped out at the enemy's leisure. He had tried to talk some sense into the Jedi Master, several years his senior, before leaving on this mission, but, of course, his comments fell on increasingly deaf ears. Corso had found himself siding with Kip Duron, Skywalker's dynamic opposite when it came to opinions of what the Jedi should do in this war. The Vong had stopped, for the time being, at Duro, which seemed to make this the perfect time to strike back at the Vong, acting offensively rather than defensively. But Skywalker insisted that without thorough knowledge of the enemy, the New Republic and the Yuuzhan Vong were too evenly matched. Too many would die in a direct assault against enemy lines that might not be quite as easy to break as some would suggest. Too evenly matched? No. There was nothing even about this conflict yet. The New Republic was increasingly feeling the sting of loss after loss, without much in the way of true, clear victories to give morale a boost. And so, rather than continuing to argue the point for aggression, he had listened as Master Skywalker laid out his new assignment. On the border between known space and the unknown regions, two Jedi on an intelligence-gathering mission to Calakis, Lucas and Tarvin, had detected signs of Yuuzhan Vong activity. Unfortunately, Lucas and Tarvin were only recently promoted to Jedi Knights, both too inexperienced yet to send on a more detailed investigation. Someone else had to do a follow-up. Simple enough. But there was something more. While on their survey, Lucas spoke to a native who wanted to see his lightsaber, to compare it to one he said, the Noble War. There could be another Jedi out there. And quite frankly, the Jedi need all the help they can get right now. And so, he had spent 2 days at home. And what a couple of days they had been. After swooping in and being welcomed back into Sera's open arms, he was nearly tossed right back out again by those same Arvs for even considering another mission so soon. But both he and Sera knew the dangers facing the galaxy. Sera was even considering working with Selkor in the future to help those displaced by the Vong invasion. So, in the end, she had kissed him goodbye as she always did, and he had set out in the Forerunner to investigate Calakis. That was where he met this Sith and bastard. Finally, a volley of Corso's blasts caught the Dovin Basal off guard just enough to allow one well-timed concussion missile to strike home on the ship's hull. The skip's path began to waver.
That ugly lump of nerf droppings isn't so efficient now, is it?
As both the Forerunner and the skip streaked past the planet Calakis, certainly visible to any stargazers below on the tan-colored world, Corso began to line up his sights onto the skip's aft again. But before he could twitch to fire another stream of hot light, he was forced into a steep dive toward the planet's gravity well, as five more coral skippers emerged from the far side of Calakis's moon and began firing plasma with a passion. He had just begun to smirk at the success of his maneuver when the Forerunner lurched like a dewback having a seizure.
Damn it! Damn! That is not good.
Corso fought to regain control of the craft, cursing himself for not taking more time to familiarize himself with the vessel before his last mission. New ships always had quirks, but if this one had any, this was not the time to find them. The vessel shuddered again as another blast nearly penetrated the shields. At least the Vong had yet to get close enough to sap his shields with their Dovin Basals. That, or the tactics developed by Rogue Squadron to save fighters in close combat, really worked. He would have to remember to thank Gavin Darklighter and company when he got back. He'd have to remember... Before he could continue his line of thought, another blast from one of the skips struck the Forerunner, causing the auxiliary control panel to flare in a spray of sparks and a piece of the console to catch him across the side of the head. Corso lost consciousness and flopped down across the controls, sending the Forerunner in a slow, uncontrolled ascent away from Calakis. As the skips approached the Forerunner, it seemed that the universe had counted Corso Vale's days and found this to be his last. But just as quickly as the skips had emerged from behind the moon, they were caught in a wash of dozens of missiles and volleys of energy blasts. After but a few moments of such fire, all but one of the skips had been decimated, with the survivor falling through Calakis's atmosphere to crash into the Southern Ocean. The immediate task complete, Corso's saviors turned their attention to the Forerunner. A tractor beam locked on the careening vessel, jolting Corso awake. Corso scanned the external sensor logs, confirming the newcomers as friendly, but not recognizing the configuration of the huge lead vessel, which was even now tractoring him into his docking bay and turning toward Calakis. He searched his memory for any vessel he had ever seen that matched what little of the vessel's configuration he could see from below its hull. He could recall no such vessel. He cursed his bad memory. In truth, Corso's memory was not at fault. He had never before seen a vessel of this kind. It was a Kiss destroyer. To be continued. You've been listening to a Chrono Radio presentation of Star Wars, Everything Changes, a sequel to the Nothing Changes audio drama from Razor's Edge Audio, starring Matthew Gordon as Darius Kova, Michael Sheridan as Corso Vale, Brian Bassetti as Traven Kova, Ian Bowie as Commander Deacon, Deanna Atkinson as Joel Antar and Cira Vale, Jeff Driscoll as the Prison Guard, and Nathan Butler as Shokan Lan, Lon Tell, Emperor Palpatine, and the narrator. Written, directed, and mixed by Nathan Butler. Based on the Prelude to Hope Forgotten Knights concepts developed by Nathan Butler from concepts and characters originally created by Devin Reed. Star Wars Everything Changes is a non-profit fan production produced for the enjoyment of the fans. All rights to Star Wars and any other copyrighted materials herein, including any music and sound effects, are reserved to their original creators. No infringing claims are intended. The writer and director would like to thank Devin Reed, Chris Newsom, Ryan Jordan, Chandler Morse, Megan Russell, and everyone else involved in the original creation of Star Wars Prelude to Hope, its prequel comic, From the Ashes, and its sequel short story, Forgotten Knights, all of which gave birth to Nothing Changes and Everything Changes. Extra special thanks is extended to Craig Moore, whose wonderful artwork would have graced the pages of Prelude to Hope From the Ashes, and whose concept sketches gave birth to the looks, feels, and dynamics of characters in Forgotten Knights, a.k.a. Everything Changes. And Steve Fluhart, the mixer who stepped up to the challenge of completing Nothing Changes, bringing that original Prelude to Hope storyline to life in a new form. Thank you for listening, and may the Force be with you. StarWarsFanWorks.com, the home of Star Wars fan audio on the internet. It's your home for Star Wars fan audio genre news, a comprehensive catalog of fan-made Star Wars radio shows, parody tales, and serious audio dramas. With behind-the-scenes features, a message board, reviews, tutorials, convention coverage, an internet movie database-style directory of the entire Star Wars fan audio community, and the only fan audio community-recognized Star Wars Fan Audio Academy Awards held each year. StarWarsFanWorks.com. Fandom has a whole new sound.